Right. Greetings. Let me get my water here ready. My name is Joe McCallum. This is Zenos Christian Fellowship. We will be going over John 11, making our way through the book of John. And this is definitely like one of my top 10,000 chapters. Like this is, it's up there. previously in John, we've seen, you know, the signs. John will always describe these different miraculous events or things that Jesus does as this was the sign that he performed. And this is actually the last one of these, the last sign before we get into, the Last Supper and stuff. But the friction with the religious leaders is definitely getting pretty bad. It's starting to, you know, reach a bit of a climax here. And so, yeah, then next time we'll be going into the sequence of things like the Last Supper and, the trial and all of that. So a lot of John is dedicated to that, and then also the resurrection, so we get more proportionally for that section in the book of John. But today, you know, it's helpful to think, if this is a sign, that what does this sign point to? What is it trying to guide us to understand, so we can just kind of keep that in the back of our minds as we're trying to look over this sign and what might it point out? I'm sure that it points out more than just one thing, because it's pretty, you know, good sign. But it definitely is there for a reason, and it... it's a good one, so let's check it out. Anyway, now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. Okay, so we're introduced to this character, Lazarus. And, we've seen from Mary and Martha before, they're friends of Jesus that, show up at times. Lazarus himself doesn't get mentioned a lot. In fact, he's mentioned, at least this specific guy is mentioned in John 11, but not really in the other Gospels. And some people wonder maybe it's because John was written so late. I don't want to give too much away about the story of Lazarus, but he might have been in the, miracle protection program. As we'll sort of see that as a result of what happens in this story, there was, the hit was put out on Lazarus himself, not just people getting mad at Jesus. So maybe they didn't tell that story in the other Gospels because he was still living and they wanted to not get him in too much trouble. But that's a guess. I'm guessing. You can guess your own guess if you'd like. Anyway, there is a parable in Luke 16. I'm not going to read it to you. You have to just do this on your own. But it may have some connection to this story because it's called The Rich Man and Lazarus. And the only reason I point it out is because in all of the other parables, Jesus will say something like, there was a father and a son. Or, oh, there were three men and they did blah. Or there was this traveler, or, there was a king, or there's a servant. And it's always kind of this vague designation, except in this one. He mentions there was a rich man, which, again, sort of a vague thing. And then there was Lazarus. And so if you are curious, after reading through John 11 and understanding a little bit more about the story of Lazarus, maybe you could flip over on your own time to Luke 16 to see, I wonder why Jesus named the guy Lazarus in that story, because it seems like he picked that name for a reason. And it's pretty satisfying, I have to say, so I hope you do. But okay, onward in our story. So the sister sent word to Jesus, Lord, the one you love is sick. When he heard this, Jesus said, the sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it. Okay, well, good news. So it's not going to end in death. Instead, it's going to end in God's glory so that his Son, meaning himself, will be glorified through it. So he apparently is somewhat aware of the situation, and he's got a bit of a plan even from the very first, when he first hears about it. And, he seems somewhat optimistic. Now, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was 2 more days. Then he said to his disciples, let's go back to Judea. Now this one seems a little strange. Like, you know, I mean, calling for Jesus was probably like the ancient world calling 911. Like, if you had someone who is sick, and you're like, you know, people who are sick did not hold on very long necessarily back then. I mean, that was a big deal. They don't even have, like, the Tylenol to give them to get the fever down. So, you know, they could be very much in trouble. And when he heard this, it says that he loved him, and then he stayed where he was 2 more days. That seems kind of strange. Now, there had been some trouble in the area. You know, Bethany's very close to Jerusalem, and they had been trying to kill him there. So maybe his disciples thought, well, it's just too risky or whatever. But it seems like part of his plan was to sit there and wait a couple of extra days and then to go, which seems on the surface to be a little strange. I already talked about that. Anyway, but Rabbi, they said, a short while ago, the Jews there tried to stone you, and yet you are going back? Jesus answered, are there now 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks in the daytime will not stumble, for they see by this world's light. It is when a person walks at night that they stumble, for they have no light. After he said this, he went on to tell them, our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up. The disciples replied, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better. Jesus had been speaking of his death, but his disciples thought that he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. And for your sake, I am glad that I was not there so that you may believe. But let us go to him. Then Thomas, known as Didymus, which I think means twin, said to the rest of the disciples, let us go that we may die with him. And, you know, I almost kind of want to beat Thomas. Like, there's this story and another also not flattering story is all we get on Thomas. He didn't get a very favorable description, but I'm sure he was a good guy. He gets a bad rap, but yeah, he's downer. Anyway, so here, you know, he says that I'm glad that I was not there so that you may believe. It appears as though Jesus was aware that Lazarus was going to die. I mean, he essentially tells him, he's not sleeping, he's dead. And yet he plans to wake him. So we already see that this whole thing is kind of part of his premeditated plan. He knows what's happened. He knows what he's going to do. There's no surprises going on here, right? on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus has already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem. So, okay, if the body's already been in there 4 days, and, I mean, granted, he did wait the extra 2 days, but, you know, it seems like it was pretty likely that he was maybe dead at the time that he got the message, or at least very close to that. And, you know, they probably dispatched the messenger, and he passed away shortly thereafter. And, you know, waiting an extra 2 days, so now he's been like super dead. It's almost like Jesus was waiting that he was like really good and extra dead. Like that was the plan. And, you know, so here he is coming into town. So many of the Jews who had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in their loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Okay, this part right here, I can definitely empathize with this. Or Martha feels, you know, a certain amount of confliction and frustration. You know, if only he had been here, if Jesus would have been here, then none of this would have happened. He wouldn't have died. And, you know, when confronted with death, I think it's kind of normal to wonder, why did God allow this particular death to happen? And we've seen that God can step in. We've seen that God can heal people. Maybe we even know people that God has healed. And you kind of wonder, why in that case, why not in this case? You know, we won't necessarily know why in this life, but these kinds of questions do come up, I think. They probably ought to come up when somebody dies because it is such a difficult thing to deal with. Now, In that vein, I will tell you a story. Once upon a time, when I was young and foolish, there was this idea that may or may not have been my idea that we should sled down the side of a dam, which I don't recommend it in hindsight. But my uncle and I used to go and do these crazy, like, X Games sledding things. We would try to find, like, the worst, most dangerous hill ever and try to do it in the worst, most dangerous way. And so he wasn't around. He lived in Russia. But me and some of my friends, we found the side of this dam, and we're like, oh, man, this is epic. This is going to be amazing. So we're sledding down the side of this dam, which was, I mean, you couldn't even stand on the hill. It was too steep. So you had to, like, get on the sled and get somebody to push you from behind, and then you'd be, like, tip, and then you're just going, like, warp 10. I mean, it was unreal how cool this hill was. There was a footpath that went across the middle, so when you hit that, I mean, it was like you were going to jump to the moon. I mean, it was so crazy. I'd never been on anything like it. A bunch of sleds just shattered when they hit the jump. Like, that's how bad it was. So somebody said, I think there's a second jump at the bottom, and I was like, I'm going to get this. I'm going to do this. So I went down on my chest, and I was like, all right. I landed the first jump. I was like, here we go. I feel like my tears are, you know, streaking back, and it's a ditch. It's not a jump. It's just, burn, stop. And, you know, my sled shattered into a million pieces. I found out later I lacerated my spleen. I was bleeding internally, and I kind of, like, fell over on the hospital floor, and I was pretty close to dying, and it was really sort of shocking to my system. Now, I don't know if it was, like, necessarily a miracle that I lived, but I definitely was like, wow. I mean, I sort of pushed myself up right at the last second to brace for the impact. If I hadn't have done that, I wonder if I would have died. And yet I didn't. And so I kind of, yeah. A lot of people were probably like, well, we were praying for you. Maybe God stepped in. Maybe he helped me. I don't know. This story's not over. We will read part two when the time comes. Anyway, Martha answered, I know that he, Lazarus, will rise again in the resurrection in the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. So, a statement like that, look at that. I mean, you thought that Jesus is, you know, just one of these good guys who's walking around. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. A claim like this really shows that Jesus is different than just a good holy man with some good moral teaching. You can't really reconcile claims like this with someone who's just a good guy who just goes around helping people and helping out the poor. He really said of himself that he is different than that. I mean, maybe you don't agree with his claim, fine, but he at least made those claims. Now, maybe, you know, that makes you feel somewhat uneasy, and I think that's kind of the point. I mean, he was trying to really give people a challenging thought here, a challenging image of who he was, so that they could consider it and consider whether or not they wanted to put their belief in him. Anyway, he goes on, and he says, whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? Yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who has come into the world. After she said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. The teacher is here, she said, and asking for you. When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who had been with Mary in the house comforted her noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing that she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. So again, this kind of calling out like, we had seen him already. He's healed so many people, people who were probably strangers to him. And here is the man who Jesus loved, who had died. If he had been here, this wouldn't have happened. So I'll tell you part two now of my story. So here I felt like, maybe God had come in and sort of helped me, at least on some level, to, you know, escape death. I talked to my uncle about the sledding hill that I got creamed on, because he also enjoyed those things, and I was like, whoa, I'm out of the extreme sledding game. That is not my thing anymore. Like, that was too crazy. It was too close. And he was like, ah, it's funny you mentioned it. I just found this hill that I was going to take my guys in Russia, and we're going to go check it out this weekend or something. And I was like, well, dude, just be careful, because this stuff's crazy. So I found out a week later, your uncle's been in a sledding accident, and he's in the hospital, and he's bleeding internally, and he has injuries, lacerated spleen, a lot of the same kind of injuries. The same thing happened to him that happened to me. He was going headfirst just like I was, and he hit an embankment that was hidden just like I did, except he did die. And that was very... It messed with me a lot. I mean, well, part of it was probably... I mean, my mom's mom had died. I knew her. She was, you know, she was Nana, but she was like 99 when she died or something. And, you know, she was expected to die like every Christmas. My mom was like, this is our last Christmas with Nana. And that had happened for like 17 years. So, you know, it was still sad, but it was also somewhat expected. With him, it was not. I mean, he was not that old. He was probably 40 or something. He had a wife and a couple of kids. He was, you know, leading this new, you know, effort in Russia. And, I mean, there was a lot of hopes and dreams, a lot of potential, a lot of writing on him. And then that happened. And I was like, why would I be the one who gets to walk away from this? And he isn't. I mean, I feel like I'm just kind of an idiot college guy. I got nobody's depending on me. You know what I mean? Like, I could have checked out here, no problem. And him, it sort of seems like that just doesn't make any sense to me. I felt very unsettled by it. I'm sure that his family probably felt similarly. Like, you know, they knew that what had happened, and they were probably wondering, like, God, if you would have been here, this wouldn't have happened, sort of thing. He wasn't even doing something that he knew was really risky, because the hill that he went down wasn't the side of a dam. It looked like a somewhat normal hill. What I was doing was stupid, and it would have just been my comeuppance. So... I don't know. When this happened, I really connected with this passage in John 11, because whether or not you feel like, oh, maybe God could have come in and saved, maybe God could have come in and done this miracle and didn't, and I don't understand. That is a very uncomfortable feeling, and it really can jar you up, and it really shows how challenging and how jarring just death is on any level, even if you're on the other side of it, though. You're the one who didn't die. Maybe you're the one who God provided for. That also is jarring, and it makes you wonder, like, do I deserve this? Like, why me? Maybe Lazarus is just like, I understand we are friends, but I'm just a simple fisherman. Like, why should I be the one who gets saved? And, you know, why not this other guy? Why not my uncle, who also had this happen or something? And it can be very stirring and very troubling, dealing with death just on any side of it, especially because we know that, you know, barring the Lord coming back during our lifetime, it's something we all must face, and it's something that's going to be difficult no matter when it comes. Anyway, onward. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. And then we get the shortest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. Have you ever wondered, though, why did he weep? Why did Jesus weep in this situation? You know, wasn't Jesus there to save the day? We know that he knew, even days ago, that his plan was to go there and to raise Lazarus from the dead. He had already told his disciples, yeah, he's dead, and we're going there to wake him. I'm not trying to give too much away, but let's just say that that might happen. And, you know, what was this? I mean, was he just trying to, you know, maybe he's crying to fit in because everybody else is so sad. Maybe he's really trying to, like, build the suspense. No, I mean, I don't think it was that, because if you read in that verse that we just read, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. And then we read that even again just after this. So why? Why was he crying? And I will suggest to you, it is my belief that Jesus grieves because of the human problem. This, the problem of death. It is not the natural state for us. It is something that is wrong, that is not the way that our world should be. Even if, you know, my 99-year-old grandmother, who had already had a couple strokes, and she passes away, and we're like, well, she got a long life and a good life, and she passed peacefully. I guess there's nothing that is necessarily sad about this, right? I mean, that's how you would want to go, I guess. But it's still sad. Even that. There is no such thing as the death that is like, cool. You know, like, that was the way it should be. It's always because the connection is severed. The relationship that you have cannot be there anymore. There is definitely something wrong with that. The way that God built us was to be eternal, and having that connection broken is wrong. It is not how God designed us to be. And I, whether people have beliefs or they, I don't believe in Jesus, fine. Maybe they don't even believe in any form of religion, fine. I betcha, without even meeting any of your friends, family, or whatever, at the time of a death in the family or a friend, they will be shaken, because all people are. It's really something that you can't get away from. It's too difficult. There's something inside of us that innately knows that this is not right. Maybe you become desensitized to it over time. Possibly. Fine. But I know that everybody at least has a story or two where that something like that has happened and it really tore up their insides. And that's the way, I mean, it's sad, but it's the way that it should be. And here, Jesus, although he knew he was going to save the day, and he did, but seeing all the grieving and seeing what people go through and seeing here are these people who are disconnected from their brother and their friend and one of their comrades and all of the difficulty that people go through with that, was really troubled by that. And, I mean, he knew, I suppose. Okay, yes, I am going to bring him back to life. But he also knew, not forever, you know. I mean, Lazarus, at some point, this is going to happen again, that, you know, he will still reach the end of his natural life. I mean, if it were me, I'd be kind of like, guys, I don't need to cry, because I'm here, and he's fixed, so ha-ha, you know what I mean? And the idea of also crying with them, I would just instead be like, we don't need to, because it's all cool. Except that it is in the short term, but it kind of also isn't. You know, we still live in the fallen world where people will die and all these things will happen. So that, I believe, is why Jesus wept. And I think these other passages sort of show, I suppose, God's view on death, generally speaking, which I also think is really helpful when we're talking about it. Here in 1 Corinthians 15, it says, this is talking about, you know, Jesus coming back at the end. It says, then the end will come when he hands over the kingdom to God the Father, after he has destroyed all dominion, authority, and power, for he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. The last enemy to be destroyed is death. So that is apparently the enemy that God has. One of the enemies that he plans to put under his feet is the idea of death itself. You know, us kind of thinking like, it is sad, but death's a part of life, and it's just, it's the way. It's not the way. We had, okay, just yesterday this happened, where Foster watched some of these animals sometimes, the Humane Society, and one of the kittens was extremely sick, like all of the sudden, and our kids are totally flipping out about it, and then it died. I mean, it was just like, it was fine this morning, and now it's just dead. And you know what happens, and you know, to me, we always grew up with the animals, and I've seen a bunch of animals die, and it's, you know, it's sad, but you're also like, well, you know, this is part of having pets, and you know, it is what it is. But then part of me was also kind of thinking about this passage, like, it's okay that you feel weird about this, and that you're really sad, and it isn't the natural thing. Fortunately, the idea of death is the enemy of God, one that he plans to put underneath his feet, and that this, although it is hard and will continue to be hard, only has a finite amount of time that it will still be this way. One of my very favorites in Revelation 21 says, and I heard a loud voice coming from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will no longer be any death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. So again, you know, the idea that there is not going to be any death or mourning or crying or any sort of pain or any of these kinds of negative things, that that part of our life cycle will pass away. And, you know, this will be an era that certainly the difficulty is going to continue, unfortunately, but it is within God's plans that it will pass away. And we do know, too, that because of Jesus' coming and because of his invitation, you know, if you believe in me, that you will live and that I am the resurrection and life, that this is how we will eventually reach this place, this stage of not having to worry about death and pain and all these horrible things. Anyway, onward in our story. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." But some of them said, "Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying?" Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. "Take away the stone," he said. "But Lord," said Martha, the sister of the dead man, "by this time there is a bad odor, for he has been in there 4 days. Then Jesus said, "Did I not tell you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they took away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me." When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" The dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with the strips of linen and cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." Therefore, many of the Jews who had come to visit Mary and had seen what Jesus did believed in him. But some of them went to the Pharisees and told them what Jesus had done. This is a very interesting twist in the whole story of Lazarus. I imagine that it was very shocking when, for instance, Jesus healed Jairus' daughter who had just died, and then he brings her back to life like an hour later. But 4 days later, I mean, this would have been really next level. And the people who saw this, you know, many of the people that were there believed. That makes sense. Let me get this but. So some of the people that were there that did believe were also joined by some who maybe were still, even in the face of this, not ready to accept, not ready to go ahead and throw in their lot with Jesus, despite looking at something that they knew to be impossible, that they knew could only be from God, still reached a different conclusion. So here we have kind of the dark end of John 11, where it says the chief priests and the Pharisees called a meeting of the Sanhedrin, which is kind of like their governing core system. What are we accomplishing, they asked. Here is a man who is performing many signs. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And then the Romans will come and take away both our temple and our nation. So what they're saying, they're not saying, here's this man who's out here tricking everybody and is a deceiver, as much as they're like, he's performing all of these miraculous signs, and if it keeps going like this, the Romans are going to come and get us. The way that I like to say this, in other words, if God works any more miracles, we're going to be in trouble with the Romans. What? Like, what? You know, like, if they thought that God was behind it, and how could they think anything else? What do the Romans have to do with this? You know, I mean, they are just a kingdom of people we have already seen. They should be familiar with all the different ways that God has worked through kingdoms like Persia, you know, bringing them back into the land after they'd been gone for so long. In Egypt, when they had been enslaved and they were, you know, the hegemon of the region and they were freed. All of these different cases are God, and many times show that he is bigger than the, you know, governing bodies on earth. But I guess it is kind of hard, you know, to see the here and now in front of you sometimes is difficult to overlook. Or maybe it wasn't necessarily that they actually were worried about the Romans coming. Maybe they were worried about Jesus coming and being in charge, because, of course, he was always at odds with them. And he didn't necessarily care for a lot of their traditions and a lot of their sort of legal hierarchy that they had worked out there, where they're like, well, we're sort of the top of the pecking order, and let's look down at these tax collectors. Blah, they're so terrible. Look at us. We're so great. You know, Jesus was never into that system. So him kind of coming to power would also probably elevate a lot of these lower elements of society, which, of course, they had no interest in doing. Then one of them named Caiaphas, who was high priest that year, spoke up and said, you know nothing at all. You do not realize that it is better for you that one man die for the people than that the whole nation perish. So he makes this proclamation. I mean, you can tell he's not he's not saying this because he thinks that Jesus is the Savior and that he's come. He's very much on the anti-Jesus bandwagon here, but he makes this statement. It's better that one man should die for the people than the whole nation should perish. And we read, he did not say this on his own, but as high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus would die for the Jewish nation. And not only for that nation, but also for the scattered children of God, to bring them together and to make them one. And we do see sometimes that God will speak through people, even people who are foaming at the mouth, mad, maybe against God's plan. Saul, for instance, at one point was like chasing after David in a mad rage, trying to kill him, and then he started to prophesy. And it's a strange story. I won't say anything more about it, but it happens sometimes that God will even use these people who aren't necessarily on board with him to, accomplish his purpose and, say his message like he did here. So from that day, they plotted to take his life. And actually, in the very next chapter, I don't want to steal whoever's teaching next thunder, but they mentioned that the same group also came to the conclusion that they should kill Lazarus, because as long as he's alive, that's sort of proof of this really groundbreaking miracle going down. So him above ground is not good for their cause, so he needs to also be killed, which might explain why Lazarus only appears in John, because he was sort of marked man after that. Okay, so a few conclusions that we can draw from this. First conclusion, right out of Jesus' own mouth, he said it best, why even add to it? It says, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this? You know, that is a challenge that is given to us. You know, do you believe that you can have life even though you die? That if you come to Jesus, that if you accept forgiveness for the wrong things that you've done, and pray to receive his gift, that you can believe even if you die because of who he is, because he was God's son and that he is the resurrection and the life. If you've never considered that before, maybe you ought to consider that the fact is, whether it's you or someone you love, a point in time is coming where the end of the life will, you know, come upon you. If you've never actually considered, you know, should I actually think through? Should I actually investigate? Should I actually maybe invest in what's coming next? I really strongly urge you to do so, because it is a very important thing. If we live forever and ever, as the Bible says that we will, the amount of time we spend here on earth is nothing compared to the amount of time we'll be spending afterward. And so it is worth our while to, you know, at least investigate this, ask some questions, and see if this is something that we want, a decision we want to ourselves make. Our second thing that we have for conclusion is that although death is difficult, and, it's always difficult, always challenging, we know that death is God's enemy and that it will be defeated. You know, again, just giving a tiny footnote to the end of my story, I felt very, really awkwardly bad after the whole incident happened with the sledding accident and then my uncle died and we were doing the funeral and stuff. I actually was, like, afraid when I saw, like, his, you know, widowed wife and his daughters, like, I don't feel comfortable being around them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want them to see me. I don't want them to remember. And it makes me remember. And I really was like just, I was very not at peace, I guess, not just with the fact that God had not saved him. Because, I mean, yeah, we were like stayed up all night and had a prayer meeting for him when we found out. And, you know, there were like, I don't know, 1,000 people or so at his funeral. I mean, a lot of people had been impacted by him, and it just made no sense to me to see a guy like that go down. It did help, though, just to realize that, you know, there is no such thing as the death that's just like, well, that one is okay, though. Because, you know, it was just, you know, I was imagining, I guess, I was probably talking to somebody there, like, if it had been just you, and yeah, maybe you didn't have kids and a wife and all that, it still would have really impacted lots of people. It still would have been a horrible thing. And, you know, your uncle was going to reach the end of his life regardless anyway and stuff. And it's just, this is the sadness that we live with. This is, you know, kind of, this is why God sent his son in the first place. You know, seeing all of the sadness and all the difficulty that death brought, he had to find a solution. And so that is why, you know, he came and lived this life and came to die for us the way that he did. And he will defeat it. And that is something that we really, really should be excited about and really feel hopeful about. Last thing, our reaction to God's calling and message can be to believe, but at times our reaction can be to rebel, just like what the Pharisees did. Now, I don't think that too many of us here will necessarily be like, ah, I'm going to turn against God's message to the point where maybe I'll try to crucify Jesus if he was around. I mean, you know, that's really next level hardened, but plenty of other times where the same idea can take hold in our heart. Suppose I know something that I should be doing, maybe something I know that God has put on my heart, like, will you consider this thing? Will you consider giving up this thing? And I'm like, I'm certain that it's from God. I'm certain that it's true, and no. I'd love to tell you I've never done that before this week. It happens. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, not to beat ourselves up about it. I mean, that's not the point. But just to realize that, you know, we're capable of the same kind of hard-headedness that the Pharisees were. And, you know, it's really self-reinforcing as you start to live more of a life of hardening your heart and hardening your head to certain things, the easier it gets to do. So if there are things maybe in your life, maybe whether or not it's receiving Christ and coming into relationship with him, maybe that's it, or maybe a whole host of other things that maybe God has put on your heart, you know, maybe it's time for us, you know, to pray for God to soften our heart. Maybe, you know, sometimes we have belief, but help us with our unbelief, the way that the one father said to Jesus when he brought his son to him. So anyway, there's that. If this is your first time here, you can get a free book at our welcome center over there. And we have feedback cards and our little pamphlety things. If you want to fill some of those out, you can. Also, if Xenos is your church, you know, you can feel free to give some money when they pass the hat during the questions and answers. But you don't need to feel obligated to give financially if this is not your church. If you're just our guest, just, you know, pass it by and, you know, be our guests. But you can fill out the comment card if you'd like. Lastly, the parents, if you have children back in our Oasis Children's Program, you can go and get them after the teaching by 11:45 so that the workers can clean up the rooms and do whatever it is they need. So if you have any questions or comments, stories, or et cetera, they can bring a microphone around to you.
When we read this story, we hear about these people who actually saw Jesus do this and still wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to think if our friends and family could just have a little more evidence, a little more information, they would believe. My mother is 89. She's in a nursing home. She's failing, and she's been one of the most close people to the gospel I've ever known. I've been praying for her and witnessing to her and planting seeds for 3 decades. And I kept praying over the years, Lord, please let her get to the point where you open her eyes. And a lot of other people have been too. Mm. So Friday I was there. She's not responsive most of the time. She's eating very little. But she was awake and aware. And I said, Mom, before you leave, there's one thing you need to do. And she said, what's that? I said, before you die, you need to get to know Jesus. And she's heard that 1,000 times. So she looked at me, and I looked at her, and I said, would you like to do that? And she said, yes.
Wow.
And she prayed with me and said, Jesus, please come into my life. Now, I guess my point is, the people that you guys have in your life that you would bet the farm, and I would have, she would never respond. Be persistent. Don't give up. Keep praying. Keep talking. It doesn't always happen, but I was shocked. I didn't know what to say. So, anyway.
Well, that's awesome. Thanks so much for sharing that. I actually heard a very similar story to that also this week from a girl whose parents had forbid them to come out when she was in high school, and then she started going in defiance of them when she was in college, and her dad is dying of pancreatic cancer, and very similarly, like, he probably will die this week, but just like a couple days ago, prayed to receive Christ the same way that you said, and had been, you know, even a week or two ago, was still like vehemently like, no, 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 but then, you know, while that prayer and stuff, it works. But yeah. Yeah.
What I wanted to say was, when I received Christ, it was August 24th, 1982. Never heard the gospel, ever. Received it the very first time I went to CT. Was excited, shared it with my sister. She received Christ 2 days later, and I'm like, I'm going to save my whole family. This is exciting. And I was praying for my mom for over 13 years, thinking she's never going to receive Christ. Then one of the girls in my home church, I can't remember now if it was her mom or dad, but had passed away suddenly. And it just struck me. I mean, I remember crying on the way home from home church, just saying, please, God, don't let my mom or dad die for such a long time. I'm just not ready for that. And then right away, almost immediately, I found out my mom had terminal cancer. And, I mean, I was really upset with God. If it wasn't for Pat, I don't know if I would even have stuck around. Because it was like the thing, if I was going to walk away, that was it.
Yeah.
And thank God for, you know, Pat to this day. But the neat thing was, is that she ended up receiving Christ.
Oh.
She was in the hospital, and I have my sister, who's Catholic. Not, I mean, there you can get saved. Anyways, my point is, my mom was waiting for the priest to come and do the last rites with her. And Monty was there, but my sister got stuck in traffic. So, when the priest came, Monty was being respectful and said, hey, I'm going to leave so you guys can have some time alone. And my mom back then, her conversation was she loved to have her ears tickled, like it says in the Bible, like never coming to the knowledge of the truth. And she was mentioning, and she said, no, Monty, you're a religious man, stay. And so if it wasn't for Monty, if it wasn't for God having my sister be stuck in traffic and Monty being there to hear the priest's letter to Christ, and I would have never believed in a million years.
Wow.
That would have happened. But because Monty heard it with his own ears, I know on this side of heaven that that's where she's at.
Cool. That's great. That's a great story. I mean, it is so hard. I think even though we have that faith, it's always just going to be the same challenge and difficulty. I mean, obviously, thank God that we do know that our loved ones are on the other side. And similarly, when we go, that, you know, we'll be reunited one day. Although without that, what would it be like then? I'm glad I don't have to know. But, yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
So when you ask the question from the text about why is it Jesus wept when he had known about the death of Lazarus for some time already, flashed me back to when my father died. He was deceased, and we had been planning the funeral and everything that goes with that. And I'm not a classically emotional person at all. And so when I get to the church service for the funeral, all I did was weep through the whole thing. And that is not me. And so I think what I interpret from that is you know, death is unnatural, very painful, and in the context of relationships, it can be very overwhelming. And yeah. I think that's what we see from Jesus. In the midst of all these other people he loved, as well as the crowd in general, all of them mourning and weeping, you know, that grows an emotion within that can't be suppressed.
Right.
And you weep. And then the other thing I learned about funerals, it is a very ripe time for sharing the gospel.
Mm.
People, it's very natural. People aren't resistant to hearing the gospel in that context.
Yeah.
And my dad's funeral taught me that.
Cool. Yeah. No, it's totally true. I mean, it's evidence to me so much that God has designed us and created us when we do see things like this, that like people the world over always have the difficult reaction when, you know, there's death and, you know, okay, I suppose, again, building up a certain amount of resistance to that over time, yeah, okay, stuff like that's possible, but just by natural default, we are, I mean, it's, there's something inside of us that we can't control that really connects and really is, you know, pained by that sort of thing. Yeah. Cool, I'll get this here. Yeah.
The same thing kind of happened to me. My mom was not a believer. Nobody in my family is a believer but me, and now my daughter. But I had talked about God with my mom and went in one ear and out the other. And my friends are my church friends. And why do you go to church so many times a week? And, you know, she was just always negative. And one day on the way here to CT, I'm talking to her on the phone. And I asked her, where are you going to go when you die? And she said, I'm going to heaven. I said, why do you think that? And she said, because I've been a good person.
Mm.
And so I gave her the gospel again. And then I said, do you want to pray with me to accept Christ? And she said, you say the words. And I said, okay, I'll pray it. And then you repeat it after me. And she received Christ on my way here.
Oh, crazy.
And never would have guessed that that would ever happen.
Yeah.
So it can happen.
Definitely. Well, that's cool. It's really good to hear those encouraging stories, because I know, you know, working on people 10, 20 years, it's really hard to still believe that, you know, maybe God's working or maybe something's still happening or something. So
sometimes you just have to keep asking.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate all the stories. Let's go ahead and pray. If you want to raise your hand, I'll bring a microphone around and I will close for us.
Yeah, I thank you, God, that you are the resurrection and the life. And I thank you, Lord, that anyone who comes to you, you receive them and won't cast them out. Thank you, God, for your promises that when we get there, God, there won't be any more.